Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and always mortgage confidently. It's After Hours right here on CBS Sports Radio. And I always love when we get an opportunity to talk to my next guest, the Pro Football Hall of Famer. I've got to talk to him over the years at the last few Super Bowls, and that's T.O. Terrell Owens, who's kind enough to join us right now on CBS Sports Radio. T.O., it's Zach Gelb. How you been, my friend?
I'm good, man. How are you, Zach?
Well, I'm doing great, and I appreciate you giving us a few minutes. Hey, I've been seeing you all over the place the last few days, whether it's on Mother's Day, you were doing some great charity work with single mothers and their kids, and then I also saw you on in the stands of Dancing with the Stars. How has life been lately for T.O.?
Man, I'm good, man. I'm blessed, man. And, had an opportunity to go to the Alexandria House with a lot of the single moms and kids. And, you know, I know what it's like to be raised by a single parent. So just wanted to kind of just stand and put some smiles on some faces. And, again, I'm out here in sunny L.A. Enjoying this weather.
Well, that's absolutely great stuff, and we appreciate you coming on today, T.O. You know, it's actually funny we have you on because I was talking about you a week ago. I was taking a road trip with a buddy of mine up to Boston for some NBA playoffs, Sixers and the Celtics. And when we were in the car, we were talking about some of the toughest performances we've ever seen in a big game. And one of the first names I brought up was you, T.O., with that 9-catch, 122-yard performance in Super Bowl 39. I know how tough it was for you to get on the field that day. So just take us a little bit on what you had to do to get on the field that day and the performance that you had and one of the all-time great Super Bowl performances I've seen.
Super Bowl 39, prior to that, mid-December, sustained a gruesome injury where I had to get two screws and a plate in my ankle, broken fibula. And again, like I said, I vowed to my teammates that if they got to the Super Bowl, that I would be there. And so again, unbeknownst to everyone else, doctors across the country, they said that there's no way I would be able to play in that Super Bowl. So, again, like I said, I know who I am. I know how much work I've put into my career at that time, understanding that, yeah, it was a long shot. But, you know, the training staff headed by Rick Burkholder, he put me on an aggressive rehab program with he and his staff, and we made it work. And so, you know, obviously we came up a few points short, but, again, I put my career on the line, understanding what the city had been longing for so long. Obviously, they said that I was that missing piece. I tried to add that spark, that fire to what they already had in a stellar defense and an already high-powered offense, you know, led by Donovan McNabb and Todd Pinkston and everybody else on that offense, Brian Westbrook. So it was just me just trying to do the best that I could. But again, like I said, this year's Super Bowl team, the Philadelphia Eagles, they finally brought it home.
I was talking to Chad Lewis before the game this past year, and he was a nervous wreck. His leg was shaking up and down, and he just wanted to see the Eagles win that. What was it like for you, knowing what it was like to go to a Super Bowl with the Eagles and lose, to finally see the Eagles get that city with the passion you're talking about, their first Lombardi trophy?
Well, yeah, just, again, as you're saying, just to recap everything that I had gone through just to get to the Super Bowl with the injury, knowing, you know, what we had accomplished throughout the course of the season. I mean, we were scoring touchdowns left and right. We had one of the most high-powered offenses led by head coach Andy Reid. And so, again, just to see what the Eagles did, just overcoming a lot of adversity. You think about the injury to Carson Wentz, obviously the left tackle and Jason Peters. So, again, that team stuck together. And that's one thing about a team. You know, when you rally around each other, it doesn't matter what the statistics may say. It doesn't matter what the commentators may say as far as who may win, why they think that the other team may win or what have you. If you stick together and you play as a team, the sky's the limit. So, again, they understood that probably on the outside looking in, they were probably undermatched, understanding that Tom Brady, he's been there, saw what he did the year before against the Atlanta Falcons coming back from so many points, 25 points. And so they knew that they had their work cut out for them, but they stuck with it. They stuck with the game plan. And what was so good about the Philadelphia Eagles offense in that game is they stayed aggressive. They stayed aggressive with their offense, and they put the defense on their heels, and they came out with a win.
And there was no fear either by the coach and those players, and that's a big part when you're going up against a dynasty like Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots, as we're talking to Terrell Owens right now on CBS Sports Radio. When you look back at your time in Philly, and you know, I live in the area, so I know how much people still love and adore you in Philadelphia, but people wanted more. It was only a year and a half, a you know, two-year time period. Do you wish there was more time in Philadelphia?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, unfortunate how things unfolded. And I think as years have passed, I mean, a lot of people probably had some speculation as to what happened during that year and seven games that I played. But, you know, I tried to play the best that I could. I did what I did. Like I said, you know, unfortunate how things played out. But I think over the course of the years, people now see that it wasn't my fault. I think everything that was minuscule, anything minor, they made it just into something major. I think a lot of my teammates have come out and said that I wasn't a distraction. I did what I was supposed to do. Again, like I said, I can't control how other people and other players felt about me. And again, like I said, it just wasn't it wasn't a great situation when it started to come down to, you know, me against Donovan McNabb or what have you. But I never came in there trying to steal anybody's limelight. What I did, I brought a lot of fire to the team. I brought a lot of swagger to the team. And again, like I said, a lot of things happened where I think a lot of envy, a lot of jealousy came into play, and it kind of just fractured the team. So that's when you start hearing people saying, oh, well, you know, he divided the locker room. I think that's totally untrue, unfair to what I was bringing to the team. But again, I understand how powerful the media is. They take one little thing, one little instance, and they run with it. But again, I had the best time of my life playing for the Philadelphia Eagles. And again, I'm fortunate that we didn't get to continue to see what we could have done.
When we look back at your career, and you all know it, you know, you're one of the all-time great wide receivers. And I've told you over the years when they made you wait for the Hall of Fame, and now you are a Hall of Famer, that it was absolutely ridiculous. You should have been in on the first try with the numbers and the passion that you played with in the National Football League. When you finally got that announcement right before the Super Bowl, how did you react to when you finally heard that you were going to the Hall of Fame?
It wasn't a great reaction. I explained. I mean, it was pretty much bittersweet, understanding. Just as you just mentioned, I felt like I should have been in the first go around, considering the statistics, the criteria in which guys are nominated and ultimately inducted. You think about the bylaws in which guys are supposed to be inducted. I think they overlooked all of that and brought a lot of personal things into play. And so when you start questioning my character, that's when I've come out and I've tried to defend that to the nth degree. Because again, I've had no off the field issues. Just because somebody has a perception or a misconception of you, that doesn't mean that you're this type of person or that type of person. I know who I am. I know what I did when I was in that locker room. On the field spoke for itself. But other than that, again, I'm fortunate. I'm very honored to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to use this moment really to really share with the people that sacrificed for me. Unfortunate for my grandmother, she's not going to be here to see that. She was diagnosed in 96, my rookie year, and she passed in 2012. So that lady, along with my mom, you know, the sacrifices, my family, people that helped me get to where I was on that football field, that's what I'm going to use that day to really be about. I'm going to give back to them.
And you look at that, and I think that's so awesome to say as we're talking with T.O., because most people know you as Terrell Owens, the stud wide receiver, but in reality, it was a journey to get into the National Football League, growing up in Alabama, going to Chattanooga, a third rounder, and now being one of the all-time great wide receivers. When you reflect on that journey and all the hard work, I know you mentioned your mom and your grandmother. Who else do you give credit to behind the scenes? And also, when was that moment that you knew, all right, I have a real future in the National Football League and not only could be good, but be great?
You think about, you know, just my performance on the football field. It wasn't until after like the 99-2000 season, after I made the catch, I was introduced to a personal trainer in Atlanta. His name is James Buddy Prim. He basically, again, you know, basically took my career to another level. He helped me become knowledgeable about eating healthy, taking care of my body, and my performance went through the roof. If you look at my statistics around after 99 to 2000, you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. Just with him along and him introducing me to people to really kind of maintain really my health, and that's what really created the longevity of my career. You think about what LeBron James is doing with his career. He's invested in his body to where he's taking care of it. He's playing at just basically out of this world type of performances as of late. He's 15 years in his career. So that's what I pretty much did throughout the course of my career, took care of my body. I was able to respond with a lot of injuries. Just very, very fortunate to be able to do a lot of things that a lot of people got to witness on Sundays. You think about my coaches, George Stewart, who's going to introduce me on Hall of Fame Day, Ray Sherman, my receiver coach there in Dallas, David Culley, my receiver coach in Philadelphia Eagles. Those guys saw what I brought to the table. I was able to lead by example. I wasn't that much vocal throughout the course of the week or during the week. But again, I tried to lead by example because I witnessed that with Jerry Rice, the greatest receiver of all time. So I was able to duplicate some of those things and understand what a number one receiver was about. It wasn't all about just catching the ball. I did a lot of things without the ball. And so that's what I was able to do to really, really prolong my career and do a lot of things that I did on Sunday.
With what you were on the field, you're also a great entertainer. You made someone really want to watch football with the celebrations and, you know, just your presence on the field. So I have to imagine you're going to have a stellar Hall of Fame induction ceremony speech, and there's some good personalities going in with you. Have you thought what you're going to say, and you think you'll get a little bit emotional when you're giving your speech in the summer?
Oh, no doubt. It's already going to be overwhelmingly emotional. I just was inducted into the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame just a couple of weekends ago. And just with the people that have been inducted into that Hall of Fame, I had no idea the magnitude of the award that I received. But when you think about Gene Stallings, you think about Ray Perkins, you think about Bear Bryant, Jesse Owens, you think about Bo Jackson, these are the people that are in that Hall of Fame. Mia Hamm, I was blown away. Had no idea just the magnitude of the award and what it really meant to the state of Alabama. So I'm very fortunate. They gave us 3 minutes to do our speech, and I got so emotional. It took me 3 minutes just to get myself together. So after that, I was like, oh, my gosh, the Hall of Fame is going to be – I'm going to be a wreck. So I've obviously just started to try to jot down a few things, just try to try to you know, see what I'm going to say. Obviously, thank a lot of people. But again, like I said, I'm very fortunate. You mentioned it earlier, coming out of Alexander City, Alabama, playing at a small school in UT Chattanooga. Nobody ever saw it. I think a lot of people that believed in me at that point in time, young in my career, they believed in me more so probably than I believed in myself. And so I never thought I was going to play beyond the collegiate level. But my desire, my dedication, and my discipline, that's what enabled me to do a lot of the things that I did on the football field. I mean, I was just very, very competitive. At one point in time, I just had to tell myself, don't be afraid to be great. And I had coaches that reemphasized that on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. They saw the potential that I had to be something great. Had an opportunity to play with Jerry Rice and see that on an everyday basis. So for any of the kids out there, when you feel like that there's no hope, there's, you know, you got doubt, you know, everybody comes to a moment where they feel like they don't belong, or it's going to take a little bit more effort or work to get to that next level. Again, if you just dedicate yourself and you have that discipline, you can accomplish it.
When you look at it big picture, as we're talking to T.O. right now after our CBS Sports Radio, and you know it, when you were a kid, you know, someone looks up to an athlete, a musician, you know, a big public figure. You had people look up to you for a long time. What does that mean when, you know, you talk to a kid now, someone maybe in the National Football League that says, hey, I watched you play and I really wanted to emulate my game after you and what you were about?
Man, I'm humbled. I mean, I never really saw myself as a superstar. Again, I think when I grew up, you know, I never really watched football or paid attention to the National Football League until I was a junior in high school. That's where I got my first glimpse of a football game and watched Jerry Rice. But again, you think about, you know, as a kid, I wanted to be like Michael Jordan. Everybody still wants to be like Michael Jordan, but now you have people that are following in his footsteps. You think about the Kobe's, the LeBrons, the KD's, the Steph Curry's. The way that these guys play, they really try to perfect their craft. I listen to Kevin Durant in post-game press conferences. He realizes that in order for him to be the best that he has to be, he can't be complacent. He can't be content with where he is. He's steadily trying to perfect his craft, and that's pretty much what I did. I understood that I was an average kid. I didn't want to be average, so I had to get to the point to where I started to be considered good. And in order to get to great, there's a big gap in between good and great. And so I had to try to fill that gap with a lot of hard work. And really, like I said, my dedication, my discipline to sacrifice and do things that other guys wouldn't do. I didn't drink during the course of the season. I took care of my body, body maintenance throughout the course of my career. And that's why I was able to do so much on that football field. And I was inspired and motivated by a lot of things that I wasn't able to do as a high schooler and as a college kid. I wasn't a 4 or 5 star kid coming out of high school, and I definitely wasn't that all-star, eye-popping receiver coming out of college. You think about the 1996 draft, I had like 11 or 12 guys to go before me. That was a draft where Keyshawn was drafted number one. So, again, if anybody just were to do a little research on me and see where I came from and what I've done, that should be a lot of inspiration in itself.
He's the Pro Football Hall of Famer, and Terrell Owens joining us right now on After Hours. Zach Gelbin for Amy Lawrence. T.O., I'm going to put you on hold for just a second. This has been an awesome conversation so far. I'm up against a break, so we'll continue it on the other side. More Terrell Owens with Zach Gelb here on After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a timeout and be back right after this.
He's glad you're still here. Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, we're back here on After Hours. Zach Gelb in for Amy Lawrence all week right here on CBS Sports Radio. We're going to continue our conversation right now with the Pro Football Hall of Famer and Terrell Owens. T.O., I appreciate you holding on through with us during the break. I want to ask you a few quick hitters before we wrap up this conversation. So let's do that right now. When you were playing, give me a quarterback that you were never able to play with that you really wanted to strap it up with and go out and compete on the football field.
Probably two. That would be probably Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. You think about how cerebral these guys are. Even a guy like Drew Brees. I played with a number of quarterbacks. You think about really how Jerry Rice was able to do the things that he did. He really didn't have a drop-off in caliber of quarterback. How do you go from Joe Montana to Steve Young? You know what I mean? If I had those two guys, there's no telling what my stats would have been. But again, I had to adjust my game with every quarterback that I played with. Jeff Garcia, he was an out-of-the-pocket type of quarterback. He wasn't just your pocket passer throwing the ball 50, 60 yards down the field. Again, I played with guys like Cameron Kaye, Donovan McNabb, Tony Romo. There's a number of quarterbacks. Jeff Brohm. I played with so many quarterbacks. Ryan Fitzpatrick. I had to adjust my game accordingly. Played in a number of different offenses. I had played with Carson Palmer, who played with Chad Johnson for 9 or 10 years. I stepped in there, and then I outplayed Chad. Those are things that really it says a lot about who I am as an individual and who I was as a receiver to go in there in a short period of time and put up the numbers that I did.
If you played with Tom Brady, how do you think the interaction would have been with Bill Belichick and yourself?
It probably would have been an adjustment. I played with a number of coaches as well. Coming out of college, I had 3 coaches out of 4 years. Then I get drafted to the Niners. I play with coach by George Seifert the first year. He gets fired, and then, here comes Mariucci. So, again, there's been a lot of coaching changes and a lot of adjustments that I've had to really adjust to, even with each team that I had to play for. So I wouldn't have seen it any different. They probably would have had to adjust just to me as I would have them.
Now, I have to ask you this because I would always watch you, and I would always love the touchdown celebrations and that era that you had. Joe Horn with the cell phone, Ocho Cinco with the Hall of Fame jacket, you with the popcorn and the pom-poms. It was always so much fun. What was your favorite touchdown celebration looking back at all of them?
You just mentioned the pom-poms. I think I kind of just basically was a trendsetter. I tried to elevate those guys' level of creativity. You think about Joe Horn and Chad. Those guys, I think we kind of admired each other from afar, really tried to have fun with the game. And every time that, again, like I said, you look back when we were scoring touchdowns, and I think I was vilified for a number of the celebrations. Everything that was being frowned upon at that time is now being embraced. And I think now it's great for the league. It's great for the fans. You just try to go out there. It's one thing to kind of go work every day, practice all week, and then go out on Sundays. You want to enjoy the game. You want to be able to entertain and have fun with the fans. And so I knew that what I was doing on the football field, I knew that at some point I was going to be making ESPN Sports Center the day after and the night of. So I just tried to have fun with the game, man. And so that's what I brought to the game, and I enjoyed it. Wish I could have played a little bit longer. But again, like I said, my fond memories are really of playing in Philadelphia when I had Coach Andy Reid, and I was able to really play like the receiver that I had always wanted to be. And so even with Andy Reid, he was kind of a no nonsense type of guy, but he enabled me and allowed me to be me. And even with that, I still was able to have fun and celebrate.
Last one for you, T.O., and this has been great stuff. I appreciate you coming on. When you look at it, last year when I saw you at the Super Bowl, I said to you, you still look like you could play. And you said, I'm always ready to play. If you were to still play, maybe if you came back, what do you think your stats would be in the NFL?
I mean, I'd be probably 50, 60 ball guy. Anywhere, I mean, like I said, I wouldn't doubt myself anywhere from 800 to 1,000. Yard receiver. That's just how. That's who I am and how I believe in myself. Again, like I said, I take myself back to when I was drafted. Nobody expected a lot from me then. You take myself to Super Bowl 39. Nobody expected me to come back and play at the level that I did then, and I wasn't even 100%. So there's no doubt. Again, like I said, I'm not in great game shape, but I guarantee you, I can go out on that field and I can get some work done. That's for sure.
What do you think about the current state of the game right now with the wide receivers, Odell, Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, just to name a few? What do you think about the current wide receivers? Who catch your eye?
Oh man, I've been working out with Julio Brown over the last month or so, and just able to see this guy in person. It's one thing to kind of watch him, you know, from afar, watch him on TV, but this guy right here, the sky's the limit for this guy. I think he's being underutilized in that offense. You think about this guy, I checked the stats out. He had like 1,444 yards and 3 touchdowns. You know, for a guy of his stature.
How did they get him in the end zone more, T.O.? They got to get him more touchdowns.
Right. I mean, obviously they have a defensive-minded head coach. I don't know if that responsibility is on him or the offensive staff, or if that's on Matt Ryan. You establishing that type of rapport with your receiver, especially a guy that's been in the system 8-9 years, you should have better chemistry than you are. You got to utilize this guy, especially in the red zone. There should be no reason why this guy shouldn't have a number of targets in the red zone, especially with the receiver core that they have with Muhammad Sanu, the running back that they have. Now they have some additions. Calvin Ridley, they have a young stud coming out of Alabama who's used to playing on big stages. So this is something, again, they definitely have to take advantage of. I saw Julio Jones in person. This dude is powerful. Trust me, this guy is powerful. The sky's the limit for this guy. Just to go back to Super Bowl, it was at 50, I think, when they played, or 51, when they were up 25. This guy, you look at the stats, this guy only had four catches in the Super Bowl game. And as I mentioned earlier, is how the Philadelphia Eagles beat them, is because they stayed aggressive. You can't give Tom Brady and that offense and Bill Belichick, who's a mastermind, time on the clock and with the ball, because you saw what happened then, and you saw what the lack of production of utilizing a guy like Julio Jones comes into play.
He's the Pro Football Hall of Famer. T.O., congratulations. Enjoy this process. We appreciate you giving us a few minutes.
All right, no worries. Thanks, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.